Hey everyone, this is Laz Jackson of Detroit Bad Boys, and on this week's podcast, we're talking about your 4-4 Detroit Pistons. Ben and I talk about the Pistons' underperforming offense, the dilemma of what to do with Stanley Johnson and Reggie Jackson, and I have breaking news from my sources. Yes, I have sources. I know people who know things. As always, we appreciate your continued support of the podcast. The best way to do that is to share, subscribe, and leave comments. Please leave comments on the discussion post on Detroit Bad Boys. That's the best way for us to build the podcast according to what y'all are talking about. In order to do that, though, you should be following DetroitBadBoys.com because it's the best place on the internet for Pistons news and analysis this season. With all that said, it's time to go to work. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Detroit Bad Boys podcast. I am your host, Lazarus Jackson. I'm pleased today to be joined by my usual co-host, Ben Gulker. Ben, how are you doing?
Hey, I am about as excited to talk about the Pistons as they were to play the Philadelphia 76ers this week. So, yeah, kind of a rough week, I think, right? I mean, 0-3, the record isn't terrible. In fact, we kind of called that one. But man, there were some rough moments this week. So let's talk about it.
Yeah. So losing to Boston, losing to Brooklyn in overtime on a back to back, and losing to Philly is how the week went. That's not the best week, I think, in the history of the Detroit Pistons. But I am not ready to panic just yet. The Pistons are 4-4, but they've lost to the second place team in the East, which would be Boston, twice, a top four team in the East in Philadelphia once, and they lost on a back to back. So for a variety of reasons, you could foresee a way in which the Pistons would lose all of those games, even if they played better or worse in each of them individually. It would have been nice to win that Brooklyn game. That's the kind of game you like to win in October, so you can have it in your back pocket in April. But that it's acceptable, I suppose. In that Philadelphia game, yes, the Pistons look woefully unprepared to play the game of basketball on Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon. However, that was quite literally the worst officiated game I have seen in quite some time. That was a capital offense against the game of basketball. That was a very, very ugly game to watch. And so you can just burn the tape on the Philadelphia loss. I mean, yeah, Andre tries too hard against Joel Embiid. And yeah, the Pistons. And yeah, like Blake scored 38 points. But the two teams combined to shoot 92 free throws for the game. Joel Embiid shot 17 free throws in the first half. That's just not how NBA basketball is played, right? Like, so in my mind, that loss is predictable and excusable. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does. Yeah. And I mean, we talked about this last week. We said it's easy to imagine that they struggle against Boston and Philly because they struggled against Boston and Philly already, right? In that Jersey game, I keep calling them New Jersey. I mean, a lifetime of calling them the New Jersey Nets, I guess, dies hard. Brooklyn, we kind of called that game as a trap game. The Boston game I don't have a lot of quibbles with that one. I mean, they played them mostly competitively-ish, I guess. Like, it was at least competitive toward the end of the game. The New Jersey game, obviously losing the way they did. You know, Dinwiddie's revenge, I feel like, is going to be a theme for the rest of his career against the Pistons.
Yep.
And then the only thing that I didn't like was like the first 2.5 quarters of Philly, like they just checked out. But fortunately, we got to see them at least push back and give a little bit of effort towards the end and really push Philly to make them close it. But yeah, I think you're right. It's definitely not panic time. But I do think it's time to reassess a few things. And I think we're going to unpack some of this as we talk about some of these guys and some of the strategy that we're seeing. First thing to assess overall, Reggie Jackson. off the ball isn't working. I'd like to get your thoughts on what you're seeing. Stanley Johnson mostly isn't working. And I think GR3 deserves some extended looks. And then, you know, just overall, this is something that just jumps off the stat sheet at me. Team assists are down about 18% year over year. Some of that you can attribute to the cold shooting. In fact, a good chunk of it you probably can. But I think you're also seeing a lot more ISO ball and a lot less pick and roll and almost no motion offense. So those are kind of three things that I think maybe it's time to take a look at. Don't panic. Don't burn it to the ground. Don't change everything, because what you've got going with Blake Griffin in particular is working. But there's certainly a few tweaks related to how guys are being used, maybe some tweaks to the rotation, and that plan B that we've talked about a lot. What do you do when it's not a Blake ISO? And right now they're not doing a whole lot of anything.
So definitely we can talk about the team assists. And I wish I knew, like, numerically how much of that to attribute to the fact that they're just not making shots at the rate that they have in the past, especially guys like Reggie Bullock. Maybe to a lesser degree, a guy like Langston Galloway. And, you know, obviously missing Luke Kennard puts a strain on the shooting guard rotation. We've seen Bruce Brown play more minutes than expected, I think is the fairest way I can say that. And his shot taking ability is, you know, not where you would want it to be, but like understandable for where a second round rookie would be in his NBA career at this time. I definitely think that there is an opportunity to move the ball more. I would definitely like to see more or fewer Blake isolations. Even though that's what's working, it could be working better when guys make shots. And I think that as guys make shots, the floor will space itself a little better and make itself conducive to running more pick and rolls and things like that. I also think that we will start to see more, or I hope we'll start to see more Reggie Jackson, Andre Drummond minutes without Blake Griffin on the court. We saw a little bit of that against Brooklyn, and that was when Reggie, I think, looked the most effective he had been all week. And of course, that gave him the confidence to take some ill-advised shots in crunch time against Brooklyn, but still, if you can make Reggie as effective as possible in the pick and roll without Blake Griffin on the court, I think you have to try that. Reggie being off the ball is not working, because now his 3-point shooting percentage has dropped from like 40 to like 31 or something. And so while I don't think he's a 31% 3-point shooter, I also don't think that him being off the ball is spacing the floor as well as they'd like it to. And so I'm interested to see how much the Ish Smith, Reggie Jackson backcourt experiment continues. I have a suspicion that we will, instead of seeing like Reggie and Ish play together, I think we'll just see more Ish Smith, because that's what's working. And Dwayne Casey seems very much like a guy who would like to stick with what's working, you know?
Yeah, so here's my thing. Like, when it comes to the Ish, and we're jumping ahead in our notes, and that's cool, like, because I want to talk about this, right? Like, Ish Smith is doing the things that you would expect Reggie Jackson to be doing, even when Reggie Jackson is on the court. And it's been fun to watch, because Ish Smith has become a player. Is he 30? Like, I think he's 30, right? So he's 30 years old. You're watching a dude who's 30 years old, who hasn't lost a step, and has suddenly developed like a killer's instinct in terms of getting to the rim and knocking down clutch 3-pointers from everywhere. And it's been marvelous to watch, and it's been fantastic to watch, but it's the kind of thing you would totally have expected out of Reggie Jackson, right? You can't say, well, you know, Reggie's not doing that because it's Blake Griffin's show, because Ish Smith is able to do that when it's Blake Griffin's show, right? Those two guys are on the floor together, and Ish is still finding a way to be productive. You know, so if it were me, I think you're right. I would ride Ish while he's hot, and hopefully it sustains itself. But I'd find a way to let Reggie Jackson lead the second unit then, because their second unit struggles offensively. And there's guys hurt. Two of our best shooters are hurt, and that obviously hurts everything. but the second unit could use a playmaker. And if Reggie is not working in the starting lineup, and if he's not working in the Ish Smith Reggie Jackson combo backcourt, then to me it makes all the sense in the world to move him to the second unit and let him have the ball, right? Because that's the thing he is absolutely the best at. The thing that jumps out about Reggie Jackson's stat sheet right now is that one of his best qualities, one of the things that he brings to the table, as well as anybody we've seen from Detroit in a long time, is his passing out of the pick and roll. He does dribble a bit too much sometimes, and I can live with that when he's passing well. But this season, because he's been almost exclusively off the ball, at 28 years old, right, at the prime of his career, even coming off an injury, his assist rate is lower than it has ever been at 17.5%. Prior to that, his lowest season was his rookie year. And I think that has everything to do with the way he's being used and everything to do with the rotation and scheme of the rotation that Dwayne Casey has chosen to use. So it's time to reassess this. This is not working for Reggie Jackson. It's not working for the team. Either move him to the second unit or give him the ball more in the first unit. And I think the latter just makes a little more sense, given that Ish and Blake have been so successful with the ball in their hands so far.
I wonder if they've done the thing where like Bruce Brown will start the first 6 minutes of each half and then like never play again because he's a supremely limited offensive player. I wonder if that would something an arrangement like that would be beneficial to Reggie, just like have Reggie start each quarter and have Ish close each quarter, just in a way that equitably splits the minutes. You could still find a way to have Ish Reggie lineups, and but that would enable Reggie to start the second and fourth quarters, you know, with more bench guys, with the ball in his hands a little bit more, while Blake Griffin is usually not going to be on the court. How does that strike you, Ben?
It sounds worth a try. I mean, you know, both of these guys are playing big minutes. Ish is playing 28 minutes a game. Reggie's playing 30. You can swap that and be fine. I mean, if you're both going to be playing big minutes anyways, I like him with the ball in his hands. That's where he's at his best. So any combination of experiments that allows that to happen, I think, would be worth doing. And if you can do it when Blake is resting, which I think your proposal makes that happen, then I think you got to try it, because Blake is too good to not have the ball in his hands. And Reggie Jackson's best skills are just being totally and completely underutilized. So I would think for the sake of the entire team, right, and they forget egos, forget who starts, something like that is worth a shot, definitely.
Yeah. Speaking of guys who maybe need to check the ego at the door and forget about starting, Stanley Johnson has been good and bad, but more bad than good this season. There's a sequence late in each of the Boston and Philadelphia games where you see why both why he's on the court under Dwayne Casey, and you see why in crunch time, and you see why that's not a tenable position in crunch time. In Boston, I believe he shut down Jason Tatum completely for possession, did an amazing job, the kind of defensive job that no one else on the roster is capable of doing. And then they get a stop, they come down. I think they're down five, and he gets the ball on a kick out and travels, like turnover, momentum gone, right? And it's like, if only they could. And then against Philadelphia, similar thing, right? He shuts down Ben Simmons for an entire possession. Simmons did not have a great game against Detroit, and you would lay the responsibility for a lot of that at Stanley's feet. However, Stanley missed two wide open three-pointers, one coming off a Blake double team where there was like literally no other offensive option than for him to take it. And his inability to convert those shots was part of the reasons why the Pistons were not able to close the gap any further in Philadelphia and, you know, maybe steal a game they shouldn't have had a chance to win. And so you see the good and the bad of Stanley Johnson all in within like a 30-second span. It appears that we can no longer rely on the flashes of offensive development that Stanley occasionally has from day to day. This is just kind of who he is. And so what, if anything, can the Pistons do with a guy who is the equivalent of like a Michael Kidd Gilchrist, you know?
Or is he the equivalent of a Bruce Bowen? Like, I...
Well, even Bruce Bowen was a good shooter from the corners, right? Like, that was how he survived.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. Like, yeah, you're right. So it's not even Bruce Bowen. Like, and what does that tell you? So Stanley was, on the whole, really bad this week, in my opinion. The Boston game, okay, he shoots, I think, something like 4 for 9. But let's see, what he shot, like 1 for 4 from deep, I think. Was it, is that right? 1 for 5 from deep, right? So the thing that you really need him to do is make open shots. Doesn't do that. Yes, flashes of really brilliance. I mean, you can't understate, I think, how good his defense can be at times. But then couple that with 6 turnovers, right? So 4 for 9, that's 44% from the field overall, 1 from 5 from deep. 6 turnovers, 5 fouls. That's terrible. The New Jersey game, the Brooklyn game, sorry, I can live with that game because he only takes, I think, 4 shots. Like, he goes 1 for 4, which is terrible, but at least he grabs some boards. He's engaged defensively, but he only takes 4 shots. And then we come to the Philly game where, 1 for 7, 3 turnovers, 4 fouls. And, like, is the Philly game where he had, yeah, the offensive rating of 20, that's just mind-bogglingly terrible. Like, that is so bad, it's hard to even put into words how bad it is. How do you use him with this roster is the question. When you're built around Blake Griffin, you're starting Bruce Brown and Stanley Johnson at the 2 and the 3. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. You absolutely have to have some shooting. And the question is always, like, are you doing more things positive than you are negative? Like, are you a net positive? One way to look at that is, do you outproduce your opponent? Well, Stanley's never going to outproduce his opponent offensively, but maybe he's integral to a defensive scheme. So, yeah, he needs some minutes. But right now, his offense is just so atrocious. And look, there are no signs of life. Like, it's not like his jumper looks good when he takes it. Like, he missed that shot so poorly in the Boston game that the refs had to double check to see if Drummond, you know, was tipping it in or if the ball was still had a chance and going in, and Brad Stevens gets a technical. I mean, that play right there is just so indicative how poor he is offensively that for me, like, I'm just ready to move on from him. I'm ready to move him to the bench where, you know, you play him for 15 minutes or 20 minutes a night when you need those stops. But he is so crippling to the offense because he shoots a lot. He turns the ball over like crazy. And he's such a non-threat that you can just leave him completely wide open. And it makes absolutely no difference because an open shot or a contested shot, it's 6 of 1, half dozen of the other for him, unfortunately. And I know that's harsh, but I just feel like in order for the Pistons to be a winning team this season, they have to get something out of the three. They have to get some shooting out of the three so that not everyone can just double team Blake Griffin all of the time. And Stanley Johnson hasn't proven that he's capable of doing that. It wouldn't surprise me if that 3 or 4 years from now, right? Like when Stanley's 25, 26 years old, he develops a jump shot and he finds success somewhere. Like, that would not surprise me if that happens because he's still 22. But this season, the Pistons have to go all in and winning some basketball games, and they just don't have time for Stanley Johnson to, you know, to continue to do what he's doing offensively, in my opinion.
So, 2 things. Did you see my tweet earlier today about how something I've observed with the Pistons is that at least once per game, the Pistons get a free 3-second violation on the opposing team because Stanley or Bruce's guy is just standing in the lane.
Exactly.
Unaware.
Yep.
And so it's like, okay, well, that is the sum total of Stanley's offensive contribution some nights, which is not a great place to be. Secondly, the way that I have begun to think about this, Steve Henson's article on why he was such a big Stanley advocate really shaped a lot of the ways that I try and think about this stuff. Steve has said that, you know, Stanley has been a net negative player on the year or in his career, but his net negativeness is much less than you would expect it to be given his lack of offensive capability. And so, like, how great must his defense be in order for him to get to where he is, like, net? And so, like, I've tried to look at that. I've tried to look at the things Stanley does on the defensive end. I do think that he instills a physicality and a mentality that is lacking from others on the roster. And I think that is valuable, but I continue to think that it is less value than just the ability to knock down open shots. And so, you know, I have a little bit of news. I have some sources across the league. One of them has offered up to me that there will be a change in the starting lineup, and Glenn Robinson will replace Stanley Johnson in the starting lineup on Monday against the Miami Heat.
I feel like we need a sound effect or something, because I think that's the first officially sourced comment we've had on the pod. So I feel like, do we need like a Laz's sources segment or something? Someone come up with a better name for that.
If someone also come up with a sound effect, because I don't have time for that.
No, we can have a little segment, right? Like Laz's sources. No, this Laz would be fantastic, and I would be extraordinarily happy with that change. And Glenn Robinson, look, he's going to frustrate us defensively, I think, at times. But, I mean, all he needs to do is shoot 33% from deep. That's all he needs to do offensively to tremendously free things up for the rest of the offense.
And so, I'm a huge fan of Glenn. I've talked him up on this podcast before. I've actually been paying attention to his defense for the last couple of games, for the last, you know, four or five games, not just this week, to see how, if he were to be in the starting lineup, how bad the defensive drop off would be. And I think it's definitely would be noticeable, but I don't think it would be that bad, honestly.
Let me rephrase what I mean, because I think what it will be is not that Glenn himself, his inadequacy will frustrate us, because I don't think he's an inadequate defender. I think there will probably be possessions where we'll say, yeah, if Stanley were in there, that might have gone down differently. And that's not so much a criticism of Glenn Robinson as it is we've been accustomed to Stanley Johnson being ultra reliable defensively.
Right? No, that's fair. So the main issue I've observed with Glenn's defense is that he hones in on the guy with the ball and doesn't always watch a lot of off-ball movement and gets into trouble that way. He did a fairly decent job of staying with and in front of Zach LaVine in the Bulls game. He lost Joe Harris a couple times off screens against Brooklyn. That's a big no-no. But I think if we look at the Pistons' defensive scheme this year, it is I want to say it's simple, but that like that belies like how difficult it is to execute on a consistent basis. But like the responsibilities he has won't be that many, and so I think he can like keep track of everything and be, you know, adequate defensively. And especially if Reggie Bullock is out for an extended period of time, or, you know, even just a couple more games, and the coaching staff decides to continue to start Bruce Brown, like, I think just having another guy who can shoot in the starting lineup next to Blake, next to Andre, will be more beneficial than having just two very, very defensive minded guys who don't give you a lot offensively in Bruce and Stanley.
Yeah, and I don't want to beat a dead horse. People are probably sick of hearing me talk about Stanley's offense, but the way you talked, the way you brought up Steve's point about, like, how good do you have to be defensively in order to overcome how poor he is offensively? Like, Pistons fans know what that takes, right? Like, we watched two championships with Dennis Rodman in the lineup, and it's 20 plus years ago. I get that. But Pistons fans watched a championship in six Eastern Conference Finals, at least some of those, with Ben Wallace in the starting lineup and playing huge minutes. But each of those guys found ways to add value. Like, Ben Wallace, at a minimum, was an underrated passer, and he could at least come off of a screen for an alley-oop here and there, right? Like, that was almost a given. The rip baseline, you know, screen, alley-oop, dunk was just a staple of that offense. Stanley hasn't found anything, right? Like, there has, other than the occasional fast break, you talk about it as playing downhill, you know, he hasn't even found a single niche where he can say, yeah, I can I can stake this out, right? Like, this is how I'm going to contribute offensively. He just hasn't been able to find it.
I mean, you're right. And I also don't want to beat a dead horse with Stanley. I will say that I have maintained, and I continue to maintain, that this demotion will be a good thing for him. It will enable him to more firmly establish an offensive role. I think he'll get to play downhill more against bench units, against guys who will be less physically equipped to slow him in transition. And so I think and he'll function, you know, mainly as the team's backup four, I think. And that'll be good for him. That's a good role for him. I think that puts him in more position to succeed, which is all you can really ask for at this stage of Stanley's career.
Yeah, and if he starts playing some backup power forward, we're going to need to have Jacob Kuivenhoven back on, because he called that like three seasons ago. And when he said that, I was like, no, there's no way. So if that happens, we got to have Jacob on so he can make me eat a little crow.
If he remembers exactly when he said that, we can do that, definitely. So I do want to let's go a little bit positive. Let's go a little bit positive.
Yeah.
Blake Griffin continues to be fantastic for the Detroit Pistons. He's currently averaging 28, 11, and 4. He's shooting 45% from three at 6 threes a game. His usage rate hovers around 30%, which means he's taking on almost like a third of the team's offensive possessions when he's on the court, which is ridiculous. He leads the league in touches per game, which is, according to the broadcast team, that is not a stat I think I ever expected to see. Most of the other guys on that list are guards, the James Hardens and the Russell Westbrooks of the world. I think LeBron is up there as well, but like, and you know, those guys are all functionally in point guards, or the guys who run the offense, and Blake runs the offense in Detroit. However, he's still being cramped by the lack of shooting around him in the starting lineup, which is something we've talked about. And I think that the offense does not look as good as it does, not because he's not playing well, but because guys are not shooting as well around him as you would expect them to. And I think that once guys start shooting better, once Reggie Bullock starts hitting shots, we'll see. Once Glenn enters the starting lineup, we'll see whether or not he hits shots around Blake and like how much that improves the offense. But I think we should not, despite the fact that the Pistons went 0-3 and that this is like not the most positive podcast in the world this week, I think we should not lose sight of the fact that Blake Griffin has and continues to be an extremely productive player for the Detroit Pistons, one that they would be in a very like tenuous position without, you know?
Oh, I mean, that undersells it. I mean, they may have won two games, maybe. It's possible they would have won one game so far.
Cleveland, for sure.
Exactly. They might, maybe one win, but would they have beaten anyone else? I'm honestly not sure. So a couple awesome things about Blake statistically this season. So because he has the ball in his hands so much, his overall like rebounding rate is not going to look amazing for a power forward. And so some of the advanced numbers like wins produced or win shares probably undersell how effective he's been. But on the positive side, posting the best defensive rebound percentage of his career. The closest was his rookie season at 26.9. He's at 27.6 this year. So in spite of sharing the floor with Andre Drummond, the best rebounder in the game, Blake has been a beast on the defensive glass. I was really critical of him last year because he rebounded the ball poorly in Detroit. One of the worst rebounding seasons he's ever had was last year with the Pistons. He's done an amazing job on the glass, especially defensively. The other thing that I would say is this links back to our earlier conversation about assists being down. The offense really is getting good looks. And so I'm going to give shout out to Michael Snyder here because he wrote about this either this summer or the end of last season. I forget exactly when. But he talked about the fact that a Blake Griffin offense can still generate a lot of good shots. And I remember being skeptical. We're seeing that this year, though. There are a lot of open shots that are being missed. Obviously, Luke Kennard and Reggie Bullock being out contributes to that pretty significantly. And a lot of those shots are the direct result of what Blake Griffin is doing offensively. So one of his best overall seasons so far, obviously only 8 games in, a beast on the glass, and he is the offense, right? And he's getting good looks for himself. He's not pressing. I mean, there are maybe only 2-3 shots a game where I sort of think, well, maybe he shouldn't have taken that one. But overall, he's not forcing it. And to his credit, he has been incredibly unselfish. And that just doesn't show up on the box score because nobody's making anything. So Blake Griffin has been fantastic. I mean, other than Grant Hill, I don't know if I remember a player consuming this much of the offensive role in Detroit and being this successful. I mean, he's just been absolutely fantastic.
I will say that he has begun, because of the offensive load placed upon him, he has begun turning the ball over at a rate that, were it to continue at that level, I would find unacceptable. But again, a lot of these turnovers are functions of guys not being in the right place, or a double coming and him being unable to get the ball out, in which case, like, better shooters surrounding him would be make teams less likely to double, and so he'd be able to take advantage of that. I think that his gain on the defensive glass is Andre Drummond's loss, but I'm fine with that because Blake can grab and go in a way that Andre Drummond cannot. I also think that 45% from three is, you know, slightly unsustainable. I'd expect him to settle, hopefully, in like the 37-38 range. And even then, that would be the best three-point shooting season of his career. And so I would gladly take that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if he shoots 40% from deep, right? Like, if he drops off several percentage points, that's still ridiculous. I mean, and even if it's 38%, that's still very, very good. And here's two little fun stats that we can talk about. Blake Griffin's turnover rate, a little higher than you maybe want it to be. Fun fact, Stanley Johnson's is almost twice as high as Blake Griffin's, and his usage rate is exactly half. So, if you want to talk turnovers, we can shit on Stanley Johnson a little more. The other thing I'll say is, remarkably to me, and I've been paying a little bit of attention to this, remarkably to me, Andre Drummond's defensive rebounding rate is actually higher than it was a season ago, and it's the highest of his career, which is, it's just incredible. These two guys are dominating the defensive glass. It is one and done almost all of the time. Because these two guys are just monsters on the glass. They just snatch up everything.
If they get the team to miss a shot.
that's a good point. That's fair.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It is good to know. Like, we knew this, right? Like, I knew this. Once Mike Snyder really dug into this, like, he knew this. There was never a world in which Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond could not coexist on the basketball court. And it is good to finally see that vision realized. It is good to have those concerns taken care of. And it's great to have Blake Griffin as a member of the Detroit Pistons. Okay, we can stop. We can stop with the Blake love now, even though he's very much deserved it. But we're going to do this every single week. I don't want to run out of adjectives.
Yeah, I mean, it's he's been great. He's just been, and look, I was probably as skeptical as anybody. So I am happy to be completely wrong about that. He's been a blast to watch.
All right, so let's see. Let's do your numbers. Let's do your the stuff you're keeping track of.
Oh yeah, few little statistical things that I've been watching. Pace. I don't have this on a week by week number, unfortunately. A week ago on this podcast, I mentioned that the Pistons were 23rd out of 30 in the NBA in terms of pace. This week, they took a huge jump. So they jumped to 16th overall in the NBA, and they went 0-3. So only a 3-game sample, but that hypothesis I have had for several years now, the Pistons need to run, didn't work this week, but it also didn't help that we were playing, two out of three of those games are against really good teams. Still a negative point differential. That's to be expected. 3 losses. You're obviously not going to make progress there. Andre Drummond, 3-point watch. 0-for-2 from deep this week, which on the one hand is terrible because he's still a terrible 3-point shooter. On the other hand, it was only 2. And it was only you know, two out of the three games, he took one 3-pointer. So I can live with that. It still makes me cringe, but I can live with those things. You brought up a couple things as we were talking. So this isn't heavily researched, but a couple little numbers to think about. So a year ago, Detroit Pistons, 37% from deep, right? So we were talking about why is the assist rate bad? Why are our assists down so much? Pistons took about 29 threes a game last season, which is didn't seem like that many, but it was. I mean, about 37% of them. This year, they're taking 32 threes a game and shooting about 30% a year. So their three-point percentage is down almost 10 percentage points, and their attempts are up a little over 10 percentage points. Not good. If even like three or four of those per game go in, you're looking at a very, very different offense, and probably a different outcome against Boston or Philly or Brooklyn. Any one of those games could have gone a different way if two or three more three-point attempts go in. So I think we're on to something. As the three ball goes, so this team will go. Obviously, if Blake really starts to struggle, you can throw that out the window because Blake is carrying such a heavy load. But a couple more made shots and things look a lot different.
And like I think it'll balance out, right? The three-point shooting will balance itself out. Langston and Reggie are not going to shoot this badly the entire season. Luke will return. On the other hand, Blake will probably not shoot 45% from three, and Ish will probably not continue to shoot, I believe, above 40%. So you expect it to even itself out, but in the end, for Blake and Ish to settle like into the Blake to settle in, like the 37, 38, and Ish to settle in like the 35, 36 range, and hopefully Reggie Bullock continues to shoot the 40% that he shot from three for his career, and Langston is like somewhere in the 36 to 38% range, and like if you know when that happens, that'll combine to be, you know, like maybe another two threes a game, which is six full points, which is a lot of points over the course of the season. Yeah.
I mean, if you had that doesn't sound like a lot in any given game, but if you take like a really broad picture of it, if you could increase your point differential by 6 points, you'd be talking about like, over the course of 82 games, you'd be talking about like a historic turnaround in terms of offensive production. Like it's that big of a deal. 6 points a game over the course of 82 games is huge. Well, I mean,
like, even just think about increasing the offensive rating of this team from like the 107, 108 range to the like 112, 113 range, right? Like that would kick you up a very large section of the NBA and would put ourselves in the, you know, top 10 on offense and defensive rating that I've talked about in the past that we need to do to make the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Making shots, man. When shots go in, even the bad stuff doesn't look so bad.
Okay, Ben. The Pistons this week have Miami at home. They play at Orlando, at Atlanta, and play Charlotte at home on Sunday. So the Pistons are currently 4-4. How many games do they win this week?
Okay, so the Miami game worries me a little bit just because of the consecutive losses. But on the flip side, I like the Pistons more than I like the Heat. So I like that one. Atlanta and Orlando. Atlanta's not a total shoe-in, but it should be close. And the Magic should be an easy win. So let's say two out of those three for sure. I don't know. I don't know what to think about Charlotte right now. I really don't know. I haven't watched a full game of theirs yet. So I'm going to say two out of three in the first three. We'll be talking. I don't remember what time the game is a week ago or a week from today. But the Charlotte's a wild card. What do you think? What's the four game forecast look like?
So I was fortunate. The NBA schedule gods gifted me with a Miami-Atlanta home game last night that I got to watch and take a look at both teams. From what I can ascertain, Miami is having trouble on defense. The Atlanta team just paced and spaced them relentlessly. They were giving up open 3-point shots all over the floor. They were struggling to score in the half court, but better in transition. Miami's so tough because they're so deep. 1 minute it's Rodney Magruder lifting them on offense. 1 minute it's Tyler Johnson preserving them through the second and third quarters. Late in the game, it's Josh Richardson and Dwayne Wade with the ball in their hands. And so they have so many angles to from where they can attack you from. But at the same time, there's nothing in particular you ever have to worry about, right? They started to make Josh Richardson more of a go-to guy, but he's still not quite at that level right now. And so, like, you worry about where he'll be next year, but, like, for now, he's still learning a lot on the job. I think they'll be able to take that one.
Blake Griffin is a problem for Miami, yeah, isn't he?
They started Kelly Olynyk last night, and, like, that's not going to cut it.
Yeah.
And so I think they take that one. I think they lose one of the at Orlando, at Atlanta games, not necessarily because those teams are better than them. Well, I think Atlanta, I'm looking at the Atlanta game. Atlanta has the type of offense where if they get hot, they could just shoot the Pistons out of the gym. And they're more likely to get hot at home than they would be on the road. And so I would be cautious, definitely, with that team. That team can space the floor and attack you. And Trae Young has been quite good for the last couple weeks of the season. And then Charlotte.
Yeah, I'm anxious to watch him play a full game. I haven't watched a full game yet.
He is a very, very exciting player. And you see why the Hawks made the trade that they did. And as far as Charlotte goes, Charlotte has been, well, I think, like a top five offense this year. Dragged mostly along by Kemba Walker.
Yeah, no kidding.
Like something.
He's been the Blake Griffin of the Hornets for sure.
Yeah, shooting something insanely unsustainable from three, and just, you know, keeping the Hornets in everything. However, they are not nearly as deep as a Miami, and so I think that and they also have no one on the roster who can guard Blake Griffin, right? Just like zero people capable of that. And so I think it'll be that Charlotte will definitely be very much like a better version of the Brooklyn game, where, like, if they can shut down the offensive attack from the guards and win with their bigs, they should win. But if they can't do that, if Ish Smith is getting cooked by Kemba Walker like he was by Spencer Dinwiddie, then they'll lose.
You know Tony Parker's going to score like 16 points or something because the Pistons point guards can't guard anybody.
Well, no, Tony Parker scored like 20 on Colin Sexton last night, and it like gave rise to a bunch of Colin Sexton takes today that were pretty interesting.
The old vet schooling the young guy. That's how it goes the first time around every time.
Oh, yeah. And it's early. The vet still has his legs. Yeah. I think they go 2-2 this week. I think when we talk after the Charlotte game on Sunday, the Pistons are 6-6, and hopefully the offense is in a better place. But I think 2-2 is a fair place to be at the end of next week.
Yeah, and we're going to test those sources. We'll see. We'll see that GR3 in the starting lineup or not. So I'm anxious to see what happens.
I trust the source. However, I only have one source. And, you know, they teach you in journalism school, you need at least two and probably three to be, like, absolutely sure that a thing is happening. Okay. I only have the one source. I feel good about leaning on this one source. But if it does not happen, I'll just, you know, talk to my source and be like, hey, what happened? Right. Question mark.
Yeah, that's all right. You've qualified it enough. And look, I'll take it. I'll take it. I mean, even a rumor about Glenn Robinson starting is good enough for me at this point.
All right, Ben, do we talk Big Ten football? Do you want to or no?
I fell asleep during the Michigan game. It was so boring. I fell asleep in the third quarter because they were ahead by so many points and woke up with like 6 minutes left. So that was a good week, a good kind of boring game.
Us too. But I was very saddened by the fact that the Pistons played the same time as Michigan State did.
Oh, yeah. See, I had one right after the other, so that was perfect. Yeah. I was so tired from watching the Pistons, I just fell asleep.
Who schedules a 1 p.m. Saturday game for basketball?
You know, I thought there was going to be some explanation, right? Like, there was a holiday, like, that I didn't know about, or there was, like, someone was being recognized in the community. And I even took time to watch the pregame, which I never, ever, ever do, and nothing. It was just a 1 o'clock game on a Saturday.
I wonder if there was a hockey game, right? Because I think they use that arena for
basketball. Oh, That's a good idea. That very well may be the case.
Okay. I'll have to look that up because I also didn't know. But yeah, I was also like in a stupor at 1 a.m. with the sun blaring through the windows. Like, this is not the time for basketball.
It doesn't feel right.
All right, Ben, what's the best place for people to talk to you on social media?
Hit me up on Twitter at BR Gulker. Love talking Pistons and other things as well.
I think at like around the 15 game mark, we'll have to do like a call in, a Twitter question podcast.
Oh, I would love that. Yeah.
So you should hit me and Ben up on Twitter in order for us to do that. And I'll tell you guys when. You should hit me up on Twitter at Laz Chance. That's at LazChance. If you have any information about the Detroit Pistons and would like to be a source of mine, I'd be down for that.
Also, if you're a source about the Pistons and you're listening to this podcast, maybe reevaluate your priorities. That's all I'm going to say about that.
I think you would be surprised how how many people from within the Pistons or within various NBA organizations like consume content about their team.
Oh yeah, right? they listen to the fan bases. So yeah. Well, and we know Stanley Johnson listens because he blocked you. So I've got to be next.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. That is.
All right. The wheels have fallen off this podcast, lads. We got to end it.
All right. We'll see you guys next week.